Well, hidey-ho, people. Welcome again to another weekly episode of Ask an Atheist. We are a weekly educational live call-in program. Yes, that means you can call us and talk to us live on the air, if you feel so inclined. Our show is dedicated to atheism, skeptical inquiry, and issues surrounding the separation of church and state. My name is Libby Mistretta. My co-host this week is Kate Farr, also known as Bionic Dance on the YouTubes. And, yeah, we're ready to roll with an awesome show. It's going to be great.
Oh, yeah. And we've got a couple of really extra special announcements this week. It turns out that Ask an Atheist won all four of the awards it was nominated for on the SCAN Awards, including, this one's awesome, Favorite Religious, Spiritual, or Faith Program.
We're so happy about that. Thank you to all of our thousands or whatever of fans. I don't know, how many fans do we have? Do we ever figure out how many subscribers we have? Is it like somewhere in the range of 50 billion? And, it is, right?
I'm sure. And speaking of which, thank you to any of my YouTube subscribers who voted as well.
Yeah, for reals. Thank you so much. It was really fun. We had a really good time at the awards ceremony. It was cool to be there with all the other people who work on different SCAN programs. And it was awesome. It was great. It was fun to win. And we had a good time doing it. And yay! Yay us!
Well, okay. Everyone does like to win.
Yes.
Also, if you're an atheist, agnostic, or free thought group in the state of Washington that would like to get mentioned on Ask an Atheist, please email us at www.askanatheist.tv.
Yes, indeed. Well, what do you say? Should we do some news stories?
Absolutely,
all right,
sure.
Let's do them. Do you want to read yours first, or should I?
I'll go ahead.
Okay, yours is a good one. It makes me angry, and that's always good.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is kind of a weird and creepy story. It's appointment with death cards, shocking for the elderly. Religious extremists have been sending cards to elderly people, asking them to pick the date they're going to die. The cards ask recipients to predict the date and time of their death and advise them to get in touch with the evangelists to avoid going to hell. California-based Living Waters was founded by New Zealand evangelist Ray Comfort. We all know him. Spokeswoman Lisa Law said the cards were a way of making people aware of their mortality and to tell people about Jesus. So apparently what's happening is these people are being given these cards. It says, it says that you have an appointment with the date and time of your death.
Oh my God.
It's one of the weirdest things I've ever heard.
I thought they couldn't top the crocoduck, but Ray Comfort always manages somehow to overreach himself in terms of tasteless goofery.
I mean, goodness knows these religious people like to say, you know, oh, well, you have to prepare yourself. You have to make sure you're, washed clean of sin before you die. But sending them a card with the date and time of their death on it is just a little bit creepy. Obviously,
yeah.
A lot of people are not going to be okay with that.
It's a bit ghoulish, and honestly, it's kind of mean. I mean, they're targeting elderly people. First of all, who says only old people die? Seriously. And also, I imagine if somebody sent something like this to my grandma or somebody, I'd be pretty ticked off. So
it's true. I think the only way they could make this worse is if it came with, like, a banana attached.
The atheist's nightmare. If you aren't familiar with why Ray Comfort should be associated with bananas forever in your mind, please do Google Ray Comfort banana, or alternately, the atheist's nightmare. You will not regret it. Anyway, yeah, thank you, Ray Comfort, for once again proving that you are a classy gentleman with an excellent mustache. All right, I have an interesting, very interesting news story as well. Man dressed as Jesus kicked out of church. And the little headline here, I just have to read it because it's so awkwardly phrased. This is second time only he's been kicked out of church. Okay, so here we go. A man dressed as Jesus was kicked out of a St. Louis area church on Sunday. Police were even called to get in the middle of a spiritual showdown. We're called to be ambassadors for Jesus Christ. Ambassadors should represent, and that's what I do. I try to represent my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, said Neil Thompson Monday night, wearing the same white robe and cross and carrying the same staff he's been using every Sunday for 22 years. He dresses like Jesus every week, basically, goes around to a different church each week, hangs out with the people in the church. And, you know, this is his way of getting involved with his religious community, so great. But anyway, apparently he went to this one particular church in St. Louis. St. Paul's Lutheran Church in De Perez. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Anyway, he was told he couldn't come in. The deacon confronted him and asked whether he was a Christian. Mr. Thompson said he was indeed a Christian, and he was told he had to sit in the hallway anyway, and he couldn't go in and worship with the rest of the flock. Then, for some reason, I'm not really sure who called the cops, but somebody involved got ticked off and called the police. They came in, told everyone to chill, and went on their merry way. Apparently no arrests were made. And then, I love this line, "Oh, I forgive them. I forgive them," said Thompson. Said this, apparently, while he was dressed as Jesus, which I think is really kind of fun. This is only the second time he's been kicked out of church in all of his 22 years of evangelizing in this way, and says he'll try to go back to St. Paul's Lutheran again someday, but the police told him he should probably try to set up an appointment first with the pastor.
I have to say, this is one of the most bizarre cases of cosplay I've ever heard. I mean, granted, there are some people who dress up as some really odd things, but come on, Jesus, for, what was it, 22 years?
22 years, he's dedicated to his character. But, I mean, really, I have to hand it to this guy. He's having fun with his religion, and he's having a good time doing what he sees as the right thing, going out and spreading the word of Jesus. And I think it's really unfortunate that this guy had to take it so damn seriously and not let him into his church, because he's probably a nice dude. He's been doing it for 22 years, and he's only ever, you know, had cops involved once before. I'm guessing he's probably not a rabble-rouser.
And, I mean, I love the novelty of Jesus getting kicked out of church. It's Jesus
right.
in a church. You know, I mean, I could imagine someone, you know, dressed as, say, like Richard Dawkins getting kicked out of church. But Jesus? Really?
That's kind of a good idea. We should try that sometime. Cosplaying as Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens.
That would be pretty rad.
Okay, well, should we launch into our subject, or do you have more news articles to read?
I don't know. I don't really have any more news, but we should mention that if anyone wants to call in, we do have a phone number for that. The number is 206-421-5658. We're happy to take your call on air, and we will talk to you and answer any questions you might have. Preferably no abusive callers, but we will talk to pretty much anybody. So, you know, if you do actually have a question or support or anything, just go ahead and call in.
Yeah, and you don't have to call us about the topic for the day. If you want to talk about something else, we're happy to discuss that with you also. But we do have a topic today, one we're actually pretty excited about.
Yeah, well, it's
going to
be rather interesting.
It will be interesting. Our topic today is religion's obsession with virginity.
And boy, are they obsessed with that.
Oh my goodness. For realsies. We should also point out, too, that it really seems to be mainly an obsession with female virginity. No one really seems to care all that much whether guys are having sex before marriage or keeping themselves pure.
I mean, there are those, like, high school purity pacts that they make, and apparently guys take those too, but
sure.
For the most part, it really is female virginity that they care about, presumably because that's the only virginity they can prove.
Right. Or think they can prove, exactly. So, do we just get... are we having sound problems and I don't know about it? Okay, whatever.
But,
Anywho, pardon that. We had to reach under the table for a moment and grunt. It happens on occasion.
It does. It really does.
Speaking of virginity... Okay, this is going into realms of public access that we were never intended to go. Let's protect our awards.
Indeed. They'll be taken away from us.
Ooh. So, to put this in a little bit of a historical perspective, why are so many religious groups, and we're mainly discussing the Abrahamic religions here today because we're most familiar with them, so Christianity especially, Judaism and Islam, why are they so hung up on the issue of female purity, fidelity, virginity, whatever you want to call it? Why is this such an issue?
Well, you know, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with the whole idea of going to heaven, being pure and all of that. But since, generally speaking, you know, losing your virginity is not, you know, the prelude to death, I'm not really sure.
I hope not.
it would be a bad thing. But I'm sure a lot of it also has to do with Eve and original sin and all of that. So.
I'm thinking there's probably some kind of origin in the idea of women being temptresses and lead you astray and, oh, they cannot be free to express themselves sexually because it's evil and snakes and apples will be involved and I don't know. I think also probably the reason why it found its way into so many of the historical religious texts, especially in areas of the text where they talk about social laws, in parts of the Bible where laws are discussed, and there are several places in the Bible where various rules are discussed. Readers or adherents to biblical traditions, shall we say, are admonished several times not to commit adultery, not to lust, not to be sexually active with anybody other than your spouse in marriage. And I'm thinking probably that's most likely because these were written in the days before paternity tests. We didn't have the ability back then to tell whether a woman's child was actually fathered by her husband or by somebody else. And so by making sure that there were very strict social taboos about women not having sex with anybody until they were married to their husband, and then making sure they only had sex with that one man, that was the way that men could ensure that their actual children were inheriting their property. And it just kind of became embedded in the general culture.
So ultimately, the obsession with virginity really is about control, like so many other things with religion.
It's, exactly.
And, you know, controlling women is very important to a large segment of the population at large, never mind just, you know, religious people. But the religious obsession with controlling women and with portraying women as vile temptresses is definitely, you know, I mean, it's part of it. It's part of the zeitgeist.
Yeah. I'm not really sure why that is either. I guess I've never really bothered to research reasons as to why we are so obsessed in our world with controlling women. I suspect it may have something to do, especially in terms of religion promoting the control of women. It probably has something to do with the fact that women are the ones who typically raise children for the longest amount of time and have the greatest influence over kids when they're at a very young age. And if you have a woman kind of brainwashed to go along with whatever your religious beliefs are, she's going to pass that down to all of her offspring. That's probably something to do with it, although I don't know. I'm not any kind of a sociologist or whatever.
Well, I mean, I have to admit a lot of it is a mystery to me as well. I'm sure if you're raised religious, which I was not, it you know, I suppose it's second nature. I hesitate to say intuitive, but I'm sure it makes sense if you are indeed part of that culture. Not to say that it makes sense as anything other than a subjective thing, a kind of personal judgment, but I'm sure they understand it. They grok it better.
Yeah.
So
nice use of grok.
Oh, well.
I like that. So we've kind of figured out, or at least speculated upon, why it mattered in more ancient societies. Why does virginity continue to matter in modern society? Why are we so hung up on it?
It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And to make matters even worse, there are so many disputes about the definition of virginity.
Right.
I mean, you know,
what are we even talking about when we say virginity or purity or...
I mean, exactly. There are a lot of people out there right now who think that certain kinds of sex are not, you know, virginity breakers.
Not real sex.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's like, but you had sex. You gave somebody an orgasm. Is it not?
Or you tried.
Well, sure. But I think you tried. Does that not take someone's virginity? Or how about, you know, homosexuals?
Right, exactly. I mean, what about homosexual couples?
Will flat out state that a lesbian is a virgin her whole life if she never has sex with a man. If they never do the missionary style, you know, well, let's be clinical, penis and vagina. You know, that apparently is the only way to lose virginity for some people. For other people, clearly not. And, okay, yeah, I suppose there's a medical definition, but, you know, there's also all these social definitions.
Yeah, and the social definitions, really, I mean, you start to get into so many strange gray areas, particularly when you talk to young people about their feelings about sexuality before marriage. Is it okay to have sex? What is sex? What do you expect from your sex life, etc.? It starts to get, frankly, weird and out there. People have some strange, puritanical, messed up ideas about sex and what is or isn't sex. And it seems to be largely tied to how religious these people are, like how strange and skewed their approach to sex can be.
Well, it does seem to be almost entirely religion-based, whether or not they're making these pledges to stay a virgin until their wedding night, which, honestly, I mean, we'll get to that in a bit, but why would anyone want to marry a virgin, frankly? You know, I would want someone who knows what they're doing. But, you know, even so is like, you know, apparently if you do it in the butt, if you do it in the mouth or any of the, you know, various combinations, apparently that, you know, it has some. It doesn't take away your virginity.
Yeah,
no, it doesn't take away your purity. I mean, apparently virginity is about purity.
Yeah, as if somehow, like you know, doing it where the sun don't shine makes you more pure and acceptable to Jesus than the regular way. I mean, that seems a little goofy to me. Public access cable, people.
Yeah.
We're going with it. Hey, we're talking about health concerns here.
We are. I mean, and to be perfect, you know, non-flip for just a moment, you know, which is for me difficult. But, you know, if you are doing it in various ways, it can be a higher risk thing.
It can be.
So
yeah. Anyway, you brought up the purity pledge thing, which is something that when I was doing research for this topic, I had heard about the whole silver ring thing, as it is called, and other things like purity balls, which we'll definitely get to soon because I don't think I've ever thrown up so much in my mouth before. But some of you viewers may not be aware that there are actually evangelical movements among youth out there. They're especially targeting middle school and high school age kids, especially girls, although guys are welcome to participate too, where they get kids into these social situations, much like a concert or like any kind of really big high adrenaline event. Sorry, floor director's distracting you with notes. There are these events that they have where they have these huge, massive purity rallies, and they have, like, Christian rock bands come and play in laser shows, and thousands of screaming girls in, like, the Kingdome or whatever. We don't even have a Kingdome anymore.
No, we don't.
I almost said Thunderdome, but that was the wrong image.
That would be awesome.
It would be pretty awesome. Not what we're going for, though.
Safeco Field.
Okay, there you go. Quest Field. You got all these screaming girls who have been told that they're Christians by their parents, and they're there, and they, like, see all the cute boys playing the rock music, and they're all, and then at the end, they're like, are you going to wear this silver ring on your finger and pledge to be pure until you're married? And they're all, yes! And it's this massive social pressure thing that kind of forces all the kids at these rallies to make a very particular type of pledge to their peers and to themselves that they may not really be fully socially aware of what they're saying. And basically, they're going to these silver ring thing rallies and kind of getting on board and jumping on the bandwagon. And I was curious whether these rallies are actually effective in achieving the goal of preserving purity until marriage.
I have absolutely no idea, actually.
Well, I do.
You do.
I did some research on this. And probably not surprisingly, can you guess, Kate, what the number one or what the only means of experiencing a sex life that is promoted at these rallies might be?
Oh gosh!
Up until you're married, what's the only way to be safe?
Oh, abstinence!
Abstinence, of course,
is the only way to go.
Because that works every time, right? I mean, I guess abstinence does work if you actually abstain, but
very few, I'm sure. I mean, I was a teenager once, remarkable as it may sound, and I seem to remember, you know, being just a wee bit on the horny side. And, you know, trying to resist for I don't even know how long, many, many years, to find someone that might actually consent to marry you. I mean, let's face it, that's going to be a really difficult thing for a lot of people to do, and most of them are going to fail at it.
Right. Most of them are, and not only, I don't know. I could go on a whole tangent about this. I already did the episode about childhood indoctrination and how wrong I think it is to pigeonhole kids into one style of belief and tell them this is what you believe because I say so. So I won't go there. But how effective is abstinence-only education? Well, that's what I want to know.
That is part of the problem. I mean, abstinence-only means they're only teaching them about abstinence.
Yes.
They're not teaching them about anything else.
Exactly.
And if you're that ignorant and you're that horny, chances are good abstinence will fail and you won't have anything to fall back on. You won't have a safe way to engage in sex without putting yourself at a large amount of risk. And that is very much a problem. That is something, abstinence only is just a really rotten way to exercise birth control. It's a rotten way to exercise safe sex, to not, you know, have various diseases. I mean, you know, herpes, gonorrhea, chlamydia, all that stuff. You know, you want some kind of protection.
Yeah, you need knowledge. And in these all these groups, all of these evangelical movements that get into our public schools or that get girls to come to these big, huge virginity rallies, they promote abstinence only. And it's actually been proven in a 2001 scientific study funded by the government, the U.S. government, about adolescent health. It's been proven to be absolutely the least effective means of preventing disease and unwanted pregnancy. Yeah, scary.
Well, that does seem to be one of the problems that we have with religious people is they have an ideal, and they only want to promote that ideal.
Right.
You know, they're not actually selling anything practical. They're not selling a way of life that might actually do someone some good if they fail. I mean, they don't give you a parachute. They don't give you a safety net. And, all they want is for you to live a specific way. And if you aren't into that, if that's not your thing, or if you fail at it, you're just left floundering with no way to actually, to function in a dangerous world like ours.
Yeah. So do you want to call us and talk about virginity?
Mm.
Or anything else? Call us 206. What's the number?
421-5658.
I almost said it wrong, and that would have been bad. It would have been just as bad as Thunderdome. Anyway, so this study, I actually have some interesting segments pulled from the study about what the study covered and what some of the results were. So in 2001, around, I think they said 3,500. It may have been 35,000. I don't remember. Teenagers between the ages of 13 and 17 were polled on a lot of different subjects pertaining to health, but of course the sexual health was very interesting. These kids were also asked to describe themselves in various cultural terms, including what their religious beliefs are. Evangelical teens, according to this study, actually begin sexual activity on a massive scale shortly after their 16th birthday. So unless all these kids are getting married when they're 16, they're not waiting until marriage. The vast majority of them start having sex before, just after they turn 16. There is a much wider and more persistent gap between a teenager's attitude towards sex and their actual behavior among evangelical teens than among any other religious group of teens or teens who describe themselves as non-religious. So if that makes sense.
To me, that makes perfect sense.
Yes.
I mean, basically, if you tell someone this is a bad thing, this is something you shouldn't do, and you give them no information about it, you create a taboo and you make them want to do that thing. It becomes, well, maybe an obsession or a fetish or something, or maybe it's just like they're going, well, what's the big mystery? I want to know
yeah,
more.
Yeah, it's probably, for most of these kids, just natural curiosity, but they're giving answers to survey questions such as, I believe it's wrong to have sex before marriage. I do not anticipate that sex will be pleasurable. I think having sex with my partner will cause him or her to lose all respect for me. So they're giving these kind of canned answers that they know they're supposed to be giving, but the reality is that most of these teenagers who give these answers are out experiencing sex at a pretty young age, at the age of 16. The whole abstinence only thing just doesn't seem to be working. I mean, they're getting the message, they're getting the talking points, but it's not actually affecting their behavior. Let's see, I had another really interesting tidbit here. Let me see if I can find it. Evangelical teens are actually significantly less likely to use contraception than other religious groups. And the same study, the Ad Health study, asked all these teens where they turn for sexual guidance. About 70% of the evangelical kids said that they turn to God for advice about what to do sexually. And they are likely to use a condom around maybe half of the time. It was slightly less. It was like 48% of the time. By contrast, almost 70% of sexually active kids who turn to a trusted adult for advice, instead of praying to God, use a condom consistently almost 100% of the time.
Well, if you listen to certain, religious leaders or people who consider themselves very religious, I mean, I'm thinking Christine O'Donnell here from the most recent election we had. They say that condoms are evil.
Yeah.
They say that condoms are bad, that apparently using a condom doesn't give you any protection at all. It doesn't prevent disease or anything. And I've never heard anybody justify how does it not prevent those things? Because it makes perfect sense and we have science to back it up. I'm very confused by that.
Plus, let us not forget the Pope himself, who said that, condoms cause AIDS? He, actively said that, condoms actually make you get AIDS more.
What are people, coating the condoms in AIDS juice or something? I mean, how does that work? I don't get it.
Lubricated with extra AIDS lube. I don't know. It's pretty ridiculous. It's rather insane, in fact, that these kids are getting no sexual education, and they end up having more problems than kids who actually get told something here and there about safe sex. And also, I mean, the whole, like, who do you turn to for sexual advice?
Oh, God. Really? Oh, the only child he ever had was an immaculate conception. God's never had sex, and you want to ask him for advice?
Good point. Also, like, imagine a teen who's really horny, and she's, like, praying, like, should I have sex with Bobby or not? What do you say, God? Of course her hormones are going to be, like, gooey. And she's just going to think that's God.
How?
As if she goes to her friend, you know, the frickin' librarian who she's known for 10 years or whatever, who's always given her good advice about everything else, and the librarian's like, just make sure you use a genie hat. You know, she's probably going to have a good time in life. This is getting too racy for public television. Which way should I go?
We're
having technical difficulties.
Well,
I have to reach under the table again.
This is precisely what we won these awards for. You'll notice none of them says technical abilities. None of them, you know, technical
achievement. This kind of quality programming is what brought you 4 awards.
Exactly. And if you want to get on our case about it, 206-421-5658. Just, I mean, we'd prefer you talk about the topic, but if you want to, you know, be cranky at us about technical difficulties.
You can talk about how you can't hear me the whole time, apparently. But I've been gesticulating, so I need to reiterate what I've said, apparently. So basically what I've been saying this whole time is that there was a study that was done that actually proves that evangelical teens who receive an abstinence-only education have a much harder time making informed sexual decisions. They are more likely to be getting pregnant at a younger age. They're actually more likely to begin sexual activity at a younger age. And they are actually more likely to get STDs than other kids, and that's probably because they're not using protection.
It seems the most likely explanation. I mean, I don't know how else you get an STD, except maybe needle use, but whatever.
Yeah.
Oh,
hey,
it looks like we have a call. Joel from Seattle.
Hello, Joel.
Wonder if this is the
Hi.
Joel I know.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. How are you? What's up?
Well, I was thinking that, isn't it kind of unfair?
Whoa. Joel, we are having technical difficulties today.
Again.
Could you say that again, please?
Apparently we have been cursed by God.
Isn't it kind of unfair to expect religious people to? I mean, if they believe in abstinence, then they have to believe in that. They can't just go, "Oh, here's a box of condoms."
Okay, hang on a second.
Well, I think I caught the gist of it.
Yeah, we think we get what you basically said. If these people actually believe that abstinence is right, you can't expect them to say, "Oh, you should be abstinent," but if you're not going to use some protection, right?
Right.
Right. Well, the problem is that there's your beliefs. And then there's reality.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, reality is much more messy and much more dangerous than these people would like to admit. And so when you say they can't just say, well, use a condom, well, yes, they can. They just don't want to. And that's the problem, is their beliefs are getting in the way of being safe, of saving lives. So their beliefs
saving lives. I mean, if your abstinence is what would save the life, because then there's no risk. I mean, because you have to admit that sex can be a life and death situation.
It can occasionally. It's probably not extremely likely to be, though. I mean, it depends on what kind of social group you're in.
You could get AIDS, yes.
It's true that abstinence will save lives. It's true that abstinence will prevent pregnancy. But it's also true that abstinence is deeply unrealistic.
It is deeply unrealistic, and we'll touch on that pretty soon. And Joel, I would ask you a question. Did you remain abstinent until you were married?
Oh, no.
See? I mean, and I'm not judging you for that. Most people don't. You know why? Because we're animals, and we have biological drives, and we like to have sex. And teenagers are no different from that.
Well, I might not disagree with you. I mean, I'm a pretty liberal guy myself, but I'm just thinking it's kind of, you can't put religious people in a corner and say to them, okay, you have to adopt our liberal ideals, otherwise you're stupid and you're putting people in danger, because it doesn't really work like that. You're allowed your beliefs and they're allowed their beliefs.
But they are not allowed to corner their children into situations where they're ignorant and unable to make informed decisions for themselves. And it is perfectly acceptable for a religious parent to say, I think you should remain abstinent, I suggest it, I think it's the wisest move, but if you're not going to, here's some birth control, here's how you use a condom.
Yeah, I mean, before my parents figured out that I'm a lesbian, I was, in fact, handed a box of condoms when I went off to college, which, you know, at this point makes me laugh. But, you know, they had my best interests at heart. They were saying, we want you to be safe, we want you to be okay. You know, we want to make sure that nothing bad happens to you. Now, if these religious people genuinely love their children, that's what they're going to do. I mean, ignorance kills. That's all there is to it when it comes to sex.
Basically, okay. I think the bottom line for me is that by telling a child only about the option of abstinence, you are kind of stunting their knowledge a little bit. So it's okay to impress on them the idea that you think that abstinence is the best choice. That's
fine. Well, I think people find out on their own. I mean, you don't have to be very old for your brain to grasp that there's other alternatives besides abstinence.
Well, yeah, but most kids
it isn't necessarily because of children. I mean, how old do you have to be before you know that condoms exist?
Okay, yeah, but Joel, did you figure out how to use a condom correctly on your own, or did somebody actually tell you how to do it?
Well, I figured it out on my own, to tell you the truth.
You're probably rare in that. I think a lot of kids would misuse it in a way that would put them at risk for pregnancy.
By the time they're of sexual age, they're going to know all that stuff. They got the internet.
No, they're not.
No, actually, that is demonstrably not true.
You can't count on a kid to figure out how to take care of themselves sexually entirely by themselves. You have to at least give them the resources and say, here's where you can go to learn how to do this. And just giving sitting them in front of Google is not responsible parenting. You need to be able to say, it's okay to come to me with questions. It's okay to go to Planned Parenthood with questions. You can get free condoms there. You need to be able to give them these options so that they can educate themselves in an effective way. You can't just say, don't have sex, and then expect them to figure out how to have sex via Google.
And I have had friends who've had some very bizarre notions about how pregnancy happens because they were kept ignorant.
Yes.
I had this one friend who thought that sperm would come from one room into another while she was sleeping and impregnate her in her bed.
Like vapors or ether?
The way she described it was like a pool of slime on the floor.
Wow.
And she was not joking around with me. This is honest.
I've had nights like that.
People have weird notions.
They do. And, it's true, though. They have really weird notions.
And if you don't tell them otherwise, what are they supposed to think? I mean, people do need to be educated. Because if there's one thing I've noticed, it's that people are dumb.
Yeah.
And they need to be told.
And people are especially dumb when they're, like, between the ages of 13 and 18. Actually, let me amend that. 13 and 26. Especially dumb. And they just need to, you know, what they need from society and parents and teachers, they don't need to be told how to think or what to believe. They just need to be told, hey, if you choose to make this other decision for yourself, here's how you can get help with learning how to be safe and responsible.
Yeah, I mean, we're not asking them to be taught anything especially prurient or evil or kinky. We're just asking that they be given the facts, all of the facts.
Yes, and in any case, the study I'm referencing here shows that kids who are told abstinence only, repeatedly, and not given any other options, are more likely than other kids to get pregnant and to get STDs. So, I mean, that pretty much says it right there.
That kind of makes sense. I agree. I mean, if you're going to go that way, well, here, at least take this with you.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense.
And I understand your point that we can't really have this expectation that parents who really truly believe that abstinence is the best thing for their child, we can't really expect them to be, like, enthused about handing their kid a box of condoms or taking their daughter to the doctor to get on the pill, you know? I understand that may not be their top choice, but it is responsible parenting, and there's a study that backs that up, so...
Well, that's good, yeah. Plus, I mean, it's also good to let kids know that sex can get you in very deep trouble sometimes. So, I mean, it shouldn't be just left up to, oh, you know, it's okay. Here's just take a box of condoms and you're going to be great. Because it's, you know, I learned a lot of things the hard way. I was lucky enough not to get in any serious trouble. But a lot of people weren't that lucky. You know, there's unwanted pregnancies and all kinds of things that can happen. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you girls, basically. But, you know, kids should also know that sex can be very, you know, have some pitfalls. But anyway, thanks a lot.
Oh, of course it has pitfalls. Certainly. And we wouldn't want anyone to believe otherwise, but it just really is a matter of making sure that everyone is informed so they can make the right and safe decisions. And that's all we're asking for. I think we've kind of reached a consensus, the three of us, and I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely.
Can we still hear me?
It was great to hear from you.
Because I just switched mics, and hopefully We've solved our technical problems.
I've gained a little insight. Thanks a lot, girls.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Joel.
Catch you later.
All right.
So what else do we have?
Oh, so anyway, purity rallies. Basically a crashing failure. But what's even more disturbing to me than purity rallies, I didn't actually know much about the purity ball thing until I started researching this topic. And
Almost creepier than the ones with the, just the rings and we'll be pure. The father-daughter purity balls.
Seriously. This is some Humbert shiz right here. It's freaking me out a little bit. So basically, purity balls are father-daughter events, usually in the form of a formal dance like a prom, okay, but sometimes with a wedding-like ceremony, okay, in which daughters pledge to remain virgins until marriage, and fathers pledge to help their daughters stay pure of mind, body, and soul. This grosses me out on so many levels.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think my dad is great, but wow, no?
Okay, yeah. First of all, in some of these events, the fathers and daughters, like, exchange rings. Like, literally, they're like, here's a ring for you, daughter. Pledge your purity. Here's a ring for you, father. I will remain pure. And it's like a wedding ceremony, and it's, no, you don't marry your dad, okay? Come on!
It creeps me right the heck out. I mean, you know, it just...
And also, it has this further really weird dimension to it where these young girls are basically making these pledges that kind of identify them as chattel in their father's homes, essentially, which is really Bronze Age and weird to me.
Oh, it's old-fashioned in so many ways.
Ew!
And I can't even imagine the whole... I mean, did they give a dowry, these people? I mean...
I don't know. Do they have to, like... Yeah.
It's like, okay, here's, you know, my daughter, my purity ring, and a pig.
Yeah. It's... odd. And then, okay, so I found this really great quote about purity balls from Eve Ensler, who's a writer and a feminist. And she wrote in criticism of this movement, and she really says it all for me. Like, this takes the words right out of my mouth. When you sign a pledge to your father to preserve your virginity, your sexuality is basically being taken away from you until you sign yet another contract, a marital one. It makes you feel like you're the least important person in the whole equation. It makes you feel invisible.
You know, I would actually like to hear from, like, if there's anyone out there watching this right now, they would like to talk about their, you know, their own purity ball or having done this with their daughter or with their father or something, please call us.
Yeah, we're curious.
At 206-421-5658.
We'll be nice. Even though I know I just said it was some Humbert stuff, I'll totally be cool about it. I swear to God. Or not God. Maybe.
I swear to Poseidon. So, you know.
So, yeah. Anyway, the whole weird evangelical obsession with remaining a virgin is odd and creepy and strange, and I don't get it. And it's not only in evangelical Christianity. It's in most of the Abrahamic sects.
It's true. Yeah. But when people pledge to remain a virgin, and to me it comes off extra creepy. You know, maybe this is just a personal thing, but it gives me this really weird vibe. You know, and I think it was Mike told me that it's actually false, the whole thing about, you know, we need to throw the virgin into the volcano kind of thing. Yeah. But it gives me almost that kind of vibe, like you are a virgin to be sacrificed, whether it's on an altar or, you know, for your family's honor or something.
Yeah.
How many princesses were married off to, you know, like princes that are not even close to their own age to solidify an alliance or something? And it just feels like the virginity thing just ties into all of that.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how still, I mean, we've gone through so many thousands of years of civilization and women's vaginas are still basically being used as, like, stock in trade. Come on, it's 2010. We've sent a man to the moon. We built the Large Hadron Collider. Can we just get over this already, please?
Yeah, but apparently a hymen means more to people than anything else, anything genuinely important. I mean, come on.
It's ridiculous, yeah.
Frankly, I mean, I've said something like this before, but if I'm going to be, like, you know, maybe marrying somebody, not that that's legal for lesbians, but if I was going to be marrying somebody or getting into a relationship with somebody, you know, I'm not going to buy a car unless I've test driven it And I want to, you know, have a very similar experience with whoever I'm getting together with.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And, you know, and again, there's the whole 72 virgins thing that the Islamics have. And it's like, I think Billy Connolly said it best. He's like, 72 virgins? Give me two fire-breathing whores.
Seriously.
You know? I mean... Seriously.
72 virgins sounds like it could get awkward.
A virgin does not sound appealing.
Not really. I test drove my Hyundai a lot before I committed to it. I will tell you that.
There you go.
How does it affect your life or the lives of anybody else around you, whether you remain sexually inexperienced until you sign a marriage contract? I mean, really, let's look at it from that perspective.
Well, how is anybody even supposed to know?
Yeah.
I mean, unless you tell them, how are they going to know you're a virgin? Unless you've gone through that really horrible female genital mutilation where they have to rip you open.
Yeah,
on
don't
the
even
wedding
start
night,
me on
but,
that.
I mean, the very thought makes me want to cross my legs in terror.
Yeah, me
I'm
too.
Sorry.
I'm
no.
crossing my legs in terror right now. You just can't see it because it's under the table.
And if you're crossing your legs in terror, call us at 206-421-5658.
And by the way, you can also email us too if you feel like it. And if we get your email in time, we will read it on the air and respond to you. So you can go to askanatheist.tv. There's an email form over on the right side. Send us a little emaily-waily, and we'll talk about you. Maybe not in a good way. We are two girls, and it's kind of catty in the studio today.
There you go.
I mean, okay. You could end up, if you follow this whole evangelical abstinence-only jag, being with only one person for your entire life. And if that's what you want to do, that's fine. That's totally cool with me. I'm not saying that everybody out there needs to have multiple sex partners or whatever. It's up to you. But you should be aware that there are other options for how to conduct yourself socially, shall we say. Those options are out there, and knowledge is out there, and you don't have to necessarily conform to what you've always been told to do by the groups around you. It's your body, and it's up to you to make decisions about what you want to do with it. That goes for girls and boys, because really, nobody seems to be harping on male virginity, which I find weird.
There is that. Yeah, it is a strange thing, but then I guess in some ways it's kind of not. I mean, when you think about what we know, what science tells us about the male sex drive, apparently boys want to boink everything. Just in general, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's exceptions, and I don't want anyone out there to start sending us angry email, you know, it's like, this boy doesn't want to boink everything in sight, but apparently, in general, that's the way it goes. And so, number one, controlling that would be very difficult. You know, I mean, actually saying to guys, you have to stay a virgin for this long, I mean, maybe I'm not giving guys enough credit. I don't know. But also, it is much harder to prove because, you know, boys don't have a hymen.
Although, let's just point out, like, the reality of anatomy is, folks, that by the time in modern, in contemporary times, by the time most young women start become sexually active, somewhere between the ages of, say, 14 and 17, they don't have hymens anymore either. That whole hymen thing is largely a myth. And you know why the whole, like, bloody sheets from the first night with the virgin thing? You know why that used to happen a lot? Because girls were being married off and being forced into sexual activity when they were, like, 10 years old. I mean, for God's sake. Yeah, you have a hymen back then before you start menstruating. This show's getting really weird.
It really is. Apparently we have another call. We have Becky from Tacoma.
Becky from Tacoma, what's up?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question, and that is whether you think that it's a net positive for religious women who sort of take advantage of sort of some of the workarounds to losing a virginity before marriage. Like a hymenoplasty, where you actually have reconstructive surgery to sort of fake a hymen, or use various liquids on the night of marriage that simulate bleeding, and whether you think that's a net positive for religious women, or whether you think that that's negative.
In my opinion, it's negative.
Sounds
because,
like a negative to me, too.
Because we need to get over our hang-ups about vaginas. I mean, seriously, we as a society, we need to stop worrying about it. For reals. It's pointless. It's stupid to worry about whether you bleed on your wedding night. You know, most women aren't going to, even if they've never had sexual intercourse before. If they're starting sexual intercourse in their mid to late teens, they're not likely to have a hymen. They're not likely to experience bleeding. And if they do a little foreplay, they're probably not going to have much pain either. So, hey. We really think that for
the individual religious woman, that's a way to for them to have some agency over their own sexual
It probably is
life.
A way for them to have agency. I mean, you said net positive, so I was thinking in terms of, like, societally, like, as a larger group, is it a good thing to be doing this? In terms of, like, for an individual, I think it's up to the woman. If she's living in a culture and in a society where it is expected that she bleeds the first time she has sex, and that if she may be facing some kind of serious physical harm or other consequences if she doesn't, yeah, go for it. If you have the means to do it, do it. If it's going to save your life, potentially, or save you from physical abuse, do it. What's a little bit of chocolate sauce on the sheets with some red food coloring in it? You know what I mean?
Well, and
do what you got to do.
I'm fully in support of people doing whatever it is they want to do with their lives, but I'm also fully in support of people having enough facts to make an informed decision. So if this is what they want to do, and they've been told, here are the possible consequences of this, or here are the benefits of that, here are the drawbacks, all of that stuff, and they still want to simulate a virgin wedding night, fine, you know, whatever floats your ducky. But if that's not, if they don't have all the facts at their command, then I think it's a rotten idea.
Yeah. And like I said, it may be something that is the right choice to make for an individual woman. I just wish that we didn't have to humor those cultures and societies that put these kinds of unrealistic, anatomically impossible expectations on women. It sucks for them, basically, is what I'm saying. They may be in a situation where they need to, and where it may be a net positive thing for them to do to save their own skins. But I sure as hell wish that the entire world, the whole country, everybody living in it, was educated enough and forward-thinking enough to where this wouldn't matter.
Yeah, I can't imagine possibly wanting any of this stuff myself, but if that's what people are into, you know, there are weirder fetishes out there.
Anyway, did we answer your question, Becky?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much. Okay. Anywho. So where was I in my notes? That was a good call. Good question.
It was, yes, actually, yeah. A lot of it was stuff I hadn't heard about before. I've heard of things like that, but not all of those. And some of them are odd.
By the way, while we were talking about that very serious call, our floor director, who's a total smartass, held up a sign that said, Mecca Vagina. So
well, better a smartass than a dumbass.
That's true. Anyway, I did come up with a reason while we were discussing this about why maybe the reason why we put so much focus on female virginity as opposed to male virginity as a society is because we kind of perceive maybe higher consequences for girls because they are the ones who might end up getting pregnant, right? I mean, if you get pregnant, that's a lot of resources you have to give of yourself for the rest of, 18 years, potentially the rest of your life, to take care of your offspring. So even though in our society we do expect men to step up to the plate and take care of the kids they father, it doesn't always happen that way, but typically the female is kind of stuck with whatever kids she ends up having. So it is probably a little bit more risky for girls to not remain pure until their wedding, but...
There is that. And there's also the old school, like, we have to know paternity thing.
Yeah.
If you remain a virgin, then we know who the father is because we know the only person you had sex with. Mind you, I don't know why you should necessarily care. I mean, yes, we have a mandate to pass on our genes and all of that, but I'm adopted. If I ever have kids, I'll probably adopt, and there are a lot of unwanted kids out there. Is the idea to perpetuate your genes, or is the idea to raise a kid to have a family? Not to get on that pedestal, but still, that virginity exists specifically to know paternity is kind of it's outdated, and what's the point?
Right. And I doubt that that's any conscious reason that most people would think of in modern times when they get on their weird little horse and ride it around about this particular issue. It's probably not something that really occurs to them. It's probably more like, oh, I don't want my daughter to have to go through that. And fine, that's okay. But, even though she's a teenager and she's young, it is your daughter's body and it is her choice to make for herself. And your job as a parent is to provide her with the knowledge she needs to make an informed decision, not to tell her, oh, just don't have sex, and then... just worry about the consequences after that fails to work, as it does in, 70% of the time.
Well, yeah. I'd love it if more people believed that,
Yeah.
I'd love it if more people said, it's her body, it's her choice. I'd love it if more people said, you're my daughter, so I love you. But it seems like a lot of families just don't feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I don't know, this whole, like, weird hang-up about not having sex until an arbitrary point in time, is that, like, is it just a masochism thing? Do people just have these masochistic tendencies? Is this just another way for religious people to enjoy denying their true natures some kind of, like, assumed greater good? It's going to, like, get them into heaven faster or keep them out of hell? I don't know.
I have not a clue.
It could be that, too.
So, incidentally, if you are watching this show on the internet and still want to ask us a question, you can. There's a voicemail number, and you can call, leave a message, and we answer a lot of those on the air. The voicemail number is 206-420-0997. So, give us a call.
Yeah, call us. It'll be good times. You won't talk to us, but you'll talk to the voicemail, and that's almost as good.
Almost.
I'm kidding, it's not anywhere close to as good. But if that's what works for you, then we want you to do it.
Well, because
we care about you.
You know, talking to one of us would be bodacious. It'd be pretty rad. So give us a call, you know, right now.
It would
now,
be both bodacious and rad.
Absolutely. If you want to call us now, there's not a lot of time left, but 206-421-5658.
Anyway, yeah, thinking about the whole, like, weird masochism denying your true nature thing, I have worked with exotic animals several times in the past. And
is
anybody
or erotic?
Just exotic.
Okay. She hates puns, by the way.
I do. I hate puns. Thank you. There's a thing that animals do called stereotyping. When they're put into a situation that is totally unnatural for them, they start to have any of a variety of strange behaviors. And it's basically this manifestation of the animals not having some of their needs met. And I kind of wonder if maybe this whole sexual denial thing that is so common in religious groups manifests itself as a form of stereotyping. I mean, if we look at the child abuse that's been surfacing for years and years now in the Catholic Church among priests who are expected to remain celibate, I mean, I don't think that's a coincidence. I'm sorry.
No, probably not. I mean, let's face it, if you've got a bunch of priests out there and they're told you can't have sex for their entire lives. Now, any of you who've had sex probably can't imagine that, and neither can I. But, you know, if you can't imagine what that's like, if you can't imagine not having sex for your entire life, imagine these people who are attempting it, and the only other people they're surrounded by are altar boys. What do you think's going to happen?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, humans are humans. They have drives. I'm not going to say they have needs, because no one needs that. But, you know, come on, let's face it. That is a really awkward situation to put people in. That is not a good thing. So, you know, I mean, these rules, these religious rules about not having sex, about remaining a virgin, they're damaging.
They are damaging. They're extremely damaging. And not only to people around you, to the priests and the people who they come into contact with, but rules, arbitrary rules about when you can and can't have sex are damaging to totally innocent people, too. I mean, if you think about all these kids who are getting pregnant before they're prepared because they were never given the knowledge to protect themselves, but they still have sexual drives, they end up with all these babies that they've got to take care of. And I mean, I know it's like, ooh, you can get a reality show now if you're 16 and pregnant or whatever. Okay. But, you know, most of these children are coming into underprivileged families already set back from the beginning of their lives because their parents weren't informed enough to wait to have them. And it is damaging to society all across the board, everywhere. And we just need to stop it. Can we just stop with the hang-up about sex? Oh, my God. Sex good. Hang-ups bad. Come on. Ugh. Anyway. So we're going to be meeting for snacky snacks and drinks after the show at the Ram, and I think we're going to do the one at U Village, right?
U Village, yes.
U Village, okay. It's going to be good times.
But
down and say hi to us.
Exactly. But if you're coming down to proselytize or, frankly, to bitch at us, please don't. We're there for, you know, a friendly get together. If you want to, you know, talk about the issues, fine. But, you know, please be civil and courteous.
Yeah, you don't have to think like we do. You don't have to be an atheist to come hang out with us. You're totally welcome to come and chill with us if you think very differently from the way we do. We'd love to talk to you. Just as long as you're civil and nice and friendly.
And not
like
going to throw food at us.
No food.
Although, I think so far we've only had atheists show up.
I think so far. But, yeah, you know, there are lots of people in Seattle. Come out and chill with us. It'll be good times.
I mean, you know, despite what you've seen on the show, we are pretty easygoing. I mean, yeah, okay, sarcastic at times, but nice. You know, nice. So
we're generally pretty cool. even when we have technical difficulties and you can't hear me half the time.
Yeah. Well, you know, for some people that might be a bit... No, I'm not going to say it's a benefit. Never mind.
I don't love you anymore, Kate.
She's going to punch me, I swear.
I'm sad. I'm hurt inside. Anyway, I do have some final thoughts here. It's nobody's business what you do with your body but your own. It's not even Yahweh's business. Don't worry about it. Be safe, be smart, be yourself, be informed. Sexuality is part of being a human being, and teens are going to experience it if they feel they need to. We as adults in our society, we need to be providing them with the knowledge to make informed decisions about the experiences they want to have, and to feel comfortable enough discussing their bodies and their decisions with their partners and not heaping shame or peer pressure on them to behave a certain way. So, basically, in your face, silver ring thing, in your face.
And I mean, shame is not a virtue. I've never understood why people say that. You know, I mean, have you no shame? Darn
nope.
Right, I don't. You know, I mean, we should be able to talk about these things. I mean, yes, they're kind of personal. Yes, they're kind of embarrassing. But, you know, come on, keeping everyone informed is very much a good thing. It's the best way to keep us safe and happy. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if someone's in a relationship and not getting what they want, or if someone is in a relationship, a new relationship, and they don't know what they're supposed to do, it's awkward for everybody.
It's no fun.
I mean, come on, think about it.
Yeah. I'm thinking about it right now.
Awkward. My brain is doing pelvic thrusts. Sorry.
The show just got weird with 2 minutes left to spare.
Not everyone gets my kind of humor.
That's okay. We love you anyway. Did I mention we won 4 awards?
Oh, yeah. Check it out.
Aren't they beautiful? They're kind of see-through. We love that. So thank you again to the people who helped us win these awards by voting in the Scan Award voting process. We stacked the deck so hardcore that I'm pretty sure next year for the Scan Awards, they're going to make some kind of filter to make sure that you're voting from like a Seattle zip code or something. I don't know.
Something like that. I mean, you know, I've got, what, 7,100 YouTube subscribers? If even a third of you voted... That might have tipped the balance.
Yeah,
Thank you, guys.
It kind of became a little bit of a joke at the awards that like, anytime somebody won something that was not Ask an Atheist, they were like, we only won because Ask an Atheist wasn't nominated. It was fun, and everybody had a good sense of humor about it. But, yeah, we kind of, we did well. We were pleased.
Speaking of my YouTube channel, Bionic Dance. Subscribe. You'll love it. Trust me.
It is pretty good. You have some really fun videos on there.
Well, I do my best.
Atheism and some skepticism topics, too. All kinds of really cool stuff.
And occasionally nerd
things.
Stuff.
So anyway, that's it.
May
I'll see you guys later.
May the force be with you.